I would like to start by saying the most recent congressional connection poll by Pew Research National Journal indicated that 81% of Americans believe Congress's top priority should be creating jobs. This poll consistently indicated the lowest priority of our constituents is dealing with climate change, just 32% suggesting this in the most recent poll. The same poll indicated that 2/3 of Americans said it was important for Congress to act on our country's energy needs now. The Waxman-Markey legislation in the House, the Kerry-Lieberman legislation in the Senate, represent a significant disconnect with the priorities of Americans. They could add significant and perhaps debilitating expense to our already fragile economy, and they would be an invitation to special interest protectionism. It is time to recast the debate in Congress and match priorities with a practical alternative. By placing carbon reductions ahead of solving energy vulnerabilities, the cap-and-trade bills situate the energy debate on the most controversial and unsustainable political grounds. Energy policy would benefit greatly from something close to a political consensus. The most contradictory outcome would be the imposition of an expensive cap-and-trade plan by a narrow political margin at a time when the added expense could intensify economic pressure in the United States, thus undercutting the appetite of Americans for any efforts toward carbon reductions. Now, today I'm introducing legislation that would, first of all, reduce our foreign oil dependency. Secondly, save Americans money on their energy bills. Third, improve our industrial competitiveness. Fourth, invest in cleaner and more diverse energy sources. And fifth, better use our domestic fossil fuel resources. The plan would generate the following savings by the year 2030. It would cut foreign oil dependence by more than 40%, decrease national energy consumption by 11%, reduce average household electric bills by 15%, and cut greenhouse gas emissions by more than 20%, or about 1.6 billion metric tons, the equivalent of taking more than 240 million cars off our highways. This practical energy and climate approach prioritizes the cheapest and easiest energy savings to achieve efficiencies in our buildings, appliances, and industrial processes. It would accomplish nearly half the President's 2020 greenhouse gas emission goal while saving money and boosting the economy. If there were a future decision to price carbon with a capping or taxing mechanism, the reduction goals would be substantially easier to obtain.
I'm very open-minded about there's more than one way to control emissions. You know, this is a way. Maybe you can do something on the utility side in addition to this. But this does get you emission reductions. It gets you foreign oil, breaks your dependency on foreign oil without going down the drilling path and without having to do any capital.
So just to clarify, you think that this could get 60 votes this year?
You know, I think it's just got, it starts the game. It really does start the game toward energy independence. It starts the game toward controlling emissions. It's a hell of a lot better than doing nothing. And I'm into the business of trying to find a way to do something other than the EPA regulating carbon or the status quo.
Senator, you made an argument a few minutes ago about the oil provisions that are in Kerry.
They've been changed.
But isn't this everything you said there seems like a good argument for allowing that bill to go to the floor change it through the amendment process?
But no, it's not, because at the end of the day, you get one shot at this. If you wanted to put a cap on utility emissions, I'd want to get some drilling for it. So you don't have to give the big things to get the game started with him. The EPA is still on the table. In my world, if we're going to do a big bill, the EPA is off the table, and you're going to have more domestic production. His is a middle ground where I give and everybody else gives, but we get the game started.
What do the Democrats get, though, with the Lieber bill?
Well, I think what you do is you get clean energy, you get a reduction of oil, and you get a success. You get CAFE standards become presumptive rather than may happen. That's a big deal. That's where you really get your emission reductions on the transportation side. You don't need a cap on carbon to lower your emissions on the transportation side. You just need to incentivize something other than gasoline and make more efficient cars. I think what the Democrats might get is a bipartisan vote on something that's important. Here's what you don't get. You don't get to preempt the EPA. You don't get drilling. You don't get a cap on carbon.
Could this serve as a base bill?
Huh? Well, Cantwell Collins is a great way to price carbon. You got to believe that we need to price carbon. The science about global warming has changed. They've got a simple approach. All the money goes back to the economy, right? You don't keep any of it. But the transition costs to deal with the cap economy-wide are going to be real. There's no certainty in transition costs. So every year the appropriators meet and they decide who to reward. That's why a lot of businesses are worried about Cantwell Collins. It's because the transition costs to meet your cap have to be dealt with. We did that in Kerry Lieberman Graham. That was, I think, one of the better things we did. We created transition to go from a high carbon to low carbon economy that was very business friendly, better than Waxman Markey, better than Kerry Boxer. What he's been able to do, quite frankly, is lower emissions without having to deal with that spike in energy costs that would come with meeting a cap.
Can you clarify that statement that the science on global warming has changed? You mentioned this yesterday.
The public acceptance about global warming has changed. I've always been, it makes sense to me that the planet is heating up because you can measure heat. It's not a stretch to say that what goes in the air is contributing to man-made global warming, but I don't want to be in the camp of saying that I know people in Northern Virginia will never see snow. At the end of the day, I think carbon pollution is worthy of being controlled, whether you believe in global warming or not. I do believe that all the carbon coming out of CO2 gases, greenhouse gases from cars, trucks, and utility plants is not making us a healthier place. It's not making our society better, and it's coming at the expense of our national security and our economic prosperity. So put me in the camp that is worthy to clean up the air and make money doing so. So this idea that carbon's good for you, I want that debate. There's a wing of our party who thinks carbon pollution's okay. I'm not in that wing.
Well, just how concerned are you about climate change these days, because the reductions in this bill wouldn't be anywhere near what the scientists are recommending? I mean, I can see.
Well, I am more concerned about moving to a low carbon economy for national security reasons and cleaning up there than I am about the immediacy of the planet melting. But I do buy into the idea that carbon emissions are not good for the overall health of individuals or the planet as a whole, but there's nowhere near 60 votes to save the polar bear.
So you're not concerned with runaway climate change? That's not.
No, I think they've oversold this stuff, quite frankly. I think they've been alarmist. I think the science is in question. And as he said, the whole movement is taking a giant step backward. But that would be a shame to misread the tea leaves here. The idea of trying to control carbon is a good national security endeavor, because the carbon we're using comes from the Mideast predominantly, and it's crazy to keep being dependent on carbon fossil fuels from the Mideast. And I do believe the environmental benefit of a low carbon economy is worth the Republican Party's time and attention. Do you have to be, does climate change have to be your religion? No, it is not my religion, it is my concern.
Do you think anything that Congress does in the Gulf ought to be tightened?
Well, I think they're trying to do that. They're trying to make this a financial regulation kind of deal. We're going after the big polluters. I dare you to vote against our proposals. The problem is, if you take controversial provisions and tie it to dealing with the Gulf oil spill, you're going to wind up losing, because a lot of Republicans and Democrats feel comfortable going back home and say I voted against the cap and trade bill that raised your energy cost. Nobody's afraid of that vote. But nobody seems to be really motivated to solve the problem either. We all want to solve the oil spill problem. Do we want to generate solutions to get us away from the dynamic of borrowing money from China to pay the bills, and the biggest bill you pay is your oil bill when you send money over to the Mideast? That's a lousy way to find yourself, a lousy position to be in the 21st century. Senator Lugar, of all the ideas out here, seems to have some centrist approach that if you really do want to control carbon emissions, you get something here. If you want to break your dependency on foreign oil, you get something here. Is it the end of the debate? No, but I hope it's the beginning of the debate. It may be a concept we can rally around and build off of. And it's the only concept in town that meets that criteria. The energy bill, Senator Bingaman's a fine fella, but I'm not going to vote against it. The RPS standard is terrible for the Southeast. It really it doesn't get you to where you want to go toward clean energy, because it excludes so many things. His bill really changes that dynamic, and the CAFE standards being over time more mandatory is going to lower emissions more than any cap and trade bill on the transportation side. So,
sir,
thank you.